We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
We're back. Beningo and Roberts. We, of course, are live here at George Steinbrenner Field down in Tampa. We're here with the Yankees for spring training. We'll be here today and tomorrow. And joining us right now, one of the great, you know, the Yankees have always had that lineage in center field, you know, starting with Joe D and Mickey. And then there was this guy, number 51, the great Bernie Williams. Bernie, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. I mean, I had a little bit of a stint with the flu.
Did you?
It seems like everybody is.
As long as it's not the coronavirus.
Exactly. Yeah. Thinking about having a corona later, but none of that kind. No one of that kind.
No, that's a little different corona.
That's the corona I like.
Right.
Now, you just did the national anthem for this Yankee Nationals game, and you have become a big-time music star. Do you get more nerves doing that? Or when you were playing center field for the New York Yankees?
Well, I think that, you know, I've done the anthem so many times now that I feel a little bit less nervous. But I tell you a story, though. I was honored to play the anthem in one of those games in Puerto Rico. Mm. And I had to play the Puerto Rican anthem and the American anthem. And then halfway through my American anthem rendition, this camera guy from ESPN was trying to get the best angle, and he actually stepped on my cable and disconnected guitar from my amp.
On. Really?
It was like, da, 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 da.
Wow.
And then radio silence. You know, it's like, what happened? Did he forget? I don't know what happened. And then I just plugged it in and just kept. So, you know, that's to tell you that you never know what's going to happen. Even if you have it all planned, you know, it could be pretty treacherous out there.
Yes.
Now, Bernie, now you got something coming up here, so I'm going to give you a pop here. The Nancy and David Bilheimer Capitol Theater is announcing that you're going to be playing, and I didn't realize this, you're also a Latin Grammy nominee. I didn't know that. Congratulations
for
that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Congrats.
Yeah, it
awesome,
happened
man.
A while ago, about 10 years ago, I released an album called Moving Forward. Mm-hmm. And it was just a couple of years after I finished playing. I think it was like 2010, I think. That album got nominated for a Latin Grammy. And, I've been, you know, it's like, where do you go from there?
Right.
If you don't win it.
Right.
But you always are introduced, you know, as an artist, as a Latin Grammy nominee, which is, you know, for this kind of thing that I'm in right now, it's a lot of street credit, you know, you get just being a not only a baseball player, but a Latin Grammy nominee. It carries a lot of weight in this industry.
This is some second career you put together.
Really?
Because as Joe said, you had a hell of a baseball career.
Tremendous player.
And now you're putting together this incredible music career.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I draw a lot from my, you know, experience in baseball. You know, the ability to perform under pressure. And doing all these things, all these, you know, drills that I had to do, and, you know, the soft toss, you know, the batting and the batting cage and all that. I'm trying to transform all of that into, you know, my music preparation. And it's all about, you know, playing the scales, you know, playing the notes and make sure that your chops, like, you know, they call it your ability is at top condition. So when you play all these things, all these venues, not only you play, you know, what you're thinking, but you're actually telling the people that you're serious about what you're doing. You're not just hacking chords out there and just playing, like, you know, cover tunes. But I'm taking it really seriously, and it has paid off, man. I had an opportunity to play with a lot of great people so far. James Taylor, Lionel Richie, Bruce Springsteen, Garth Brooks, I mean, and you name it, Roy Haynes, and all jazz people. So it's been quite an experience.
Yeah, that's what a second career, no doubt about it, being a great musician. I'm very jealous. I wish I could be. I could tell you that, Bernie. Bernie, I'm talking about the great center fielders in Yankee history, and boy, so many moments and so much winning. You know, four championships. Four championships, five World Series that you played in. What of all the moments for you? Maybe it was the first one in '96. I don't know, but of all the moments in your great career, give me the one that jumps out the most for you.
Well, that's a really, really difficult question to answer because, I mean, I was involved, for better or for worse, I was involved, you know, with that team in so many great moments, you know. But some of them were not as great. And I think, you know, I would point out, 2001, even though we didn't
By the way, I think I missed the World Series. Six. That's right. You were on the 03 team, too.
Yeah, I was on the
03. Six World Series.
Yeah, six. And now
we
won
four of them. I apologize for that.
No, man. It's all right.
I forgot about that.
I wasn't about to correct you.
No, I've got to correct myself. I want to make sure I'm right.
He didn't take away a championship.
No, I didn't take away a championship.
No, yeah.
That wasn't a good one.
Yeah, that was Josh Beckett and Pudge, man. It just, like, decimated us.
And also David Wells, who got, I think it was after one inning, came out of the game.
He got the gout. Did he have the gout?
I think he had one of those things, man. He just kind of, I mean, he was one guy that would give you everything he had. Sometimes he didn't have that much, though.
Sure.
But he would give you everything. But I will mention 2001 because we, even though we did not win the series, the two games that we played in Yankee Stadium before going to
Arizona.
And just to have the series, you know, almost won, you know, two outs in the ninth inning and having the best closer in the history of the game in the mound, it tells me that it wasn't for us. Yeah. But, however, the process that we went through trying to bring normalcy to the country after that great tragedy of 9/11 and the Twin Towers, we didn't really find – I didn't really think that we were that important, you know. And I was like, well, there's a lot of things that we need to do here. And the last thing in my mind was playing a World Series and playing baseball. But as I kept, you know, being involved in the process, I realized that, you know, we had a role, you know, in the healing of the nation and trying to let these people know that they were not going to alter our way of living. And that we were part of that process. And out of all the World Series that I was involved, that one, even though we didn't win, to me is the one that makes me the most proud of being a Yankee and being a Major League Baseball player.
Get that. We're talking to Bernie Williams. I also think of you as a guy that was the bridge between some bad years in Yankee history to the beginning of the dynasty. Because a lot of guys joined in once you guys had established that winning culture. But in 1991 as a rookie, 1992, this was not the Yankees we became familiar with. How difficult was that? You're making your major league debut. You're a young player. You're in a locker room that didn't have the greatest reputation. There weren't a lot of wins. And you were one of the pieces that helped turn everything around.
Yeah, it was kind of like the – well, I mean, I think I was part of that movement that started, I think, in many ways with the suspension of at that time with Mr. Steinbrenner.
Sure.
He got involved with something with Dave Winfield. I don't even remember what it was.
Oh, yeah.
But he was out of the organization as far as making decisions that, you know, involve, you know, player personnel. Gene Michael, Mark Newman, and, you know, all those people, Buck Showalter, started really making decisions into reorganizing the team so we could give our young guys a chance to play in the team. So that opened the door for guys like Oscar Asselkar, you know, Andy Stankiewicz,
Kensel
Mullins, Kevin Moss, you know, people that came maybe a few years before I did. So I came in that wave, maybe Pat Kelly, Jim Leritz. I don't know if you remember any of these
players.
Pat Kelly, of course. Yeah, so that sort of paved the way to guys like myself into 91. And I think that there's a duality of this. The team wasn't doing as well, so they didn't have, you know, this sort of urgency to have a guy producing right away like they have now. You know, ever since the 90s and we started being successful, everybody that comes into the team is expected to produce right away.
Right.
And if they don't, they find a way to, you know, change him or, you know, trade him or whatever. I was in a position that the team wasn't doing as well, so they actually spent a little bit more patience with me trying to get me to develop into the player that I became. And I think if I would have been the same player in this era, I probably wouldn't have been with the Yankees for that long because I had to play through my pains, in my growing pains. And it took me probably about 2 years, maybe the better part of 3 years to establish myself back in, you know, it was 91, 92, 93, and then 94 we started showing signs, and then 95 with the, you know, the strike or the lockout. You know, sort
94,
of we,
you guys had one of the best teams.
Yeah, we had one of the best teams.
Yep, you did.
And remember, the series was with us in Montreal because they were loaded.
They were loaded.
Randy Johnson and Moises
Alou
and
Marcus Pedro Martinez.
Yep. And then so back in when 95, you know, the wild card thing that Don Mattingly was his last year.
Yep, yep.
He had a tremendous series, but that was his last year. And then after 95, I remember Buck Showalter got the manager of the year that year. And then the next year, he gets fired. Yeah. And Joe Torre comes in 96. New stadium, new coaching staff, and it was just a different scenario. And I was just, you know, proud to survive all of that transition, right, and then still be in the team and be one of the guys that Joe Torre counted on, you know, to be part of that, those teams in the 90s.
Talking to the great Bernie Williams, always a pleasure talking to him. This always bothered me because when I think of those great Yankee teams, okay, there's three guys that jump out at me. Obviously, Jeter and Mariano, but you. I mean, you were one of the faces of that team. So many big hits. Unbelievable what you did. I mean, maybe people don't look at you as a Hall of Famer. I do, and I always was bothered by this. They always talked about the core four. Well, where the hell is Bernie? How are you not part of that? It should be the core five, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole controversy about this comes with the fact that, you know, those guys were able to stay with the team longer and win in 2009.
Right.
And by that time, I was already out of the team.
Right, right.
So sometimes, you know, people just kind of say, well, these guys won five, you know, championships together, and they were kind of like together. And then I was already out by 2006. So I can understand, you know, the discussion and the argument. But I think to me the most important thing is that I'm in the argument.
Right.
They always mention my name.
Right,
and they would
say
the core four and, you know, Bernie, you know.
Right.
So I feel, you know, extremely proud of my career and what I was able to accomplish and what we were able to accomplish as a group. And then, you know, you get your body of work out there and let everybody else, you know, just discuss, you know, my place or our place in the, you know, in the history of the team. But it's always good to be in the conversation.
You know, to this day, you know, you talk about a guy like Giancarlo Stanton, Yankee fans judge him based on October. That's how they judge guys. One of the reasons why Yankee fans love you is you were huge in October.
Oh, God.
There were so many big moments, and you were so clutch. What was it? Was it just treating it like a regular season game? Was it being up for the big moment? What is the best answer for why you were so clutch in those big moments?
I don't think there is one definite answer that I can point out and say that was the cause. I think it was a combination of factors. I think, you know, the fact that we were there so many times – in the postseason, the fact that we sort of took it for granted as a team, you know, we're playing in the regular season, but this is not our goal. And I think it was just a collective attitude that we had as a team that
right.
we're playing here, but a month, you know, before the regular season's over or 2 weeks before the regular season's over, when the 40-man roster gets expanded, we are thinking about our next step, which is going to be the postseason. And I just took it as, you know, if you are there so many times, you find a way to feel comfortable in those situations.
You know, I bring up this year. I hesitate to bring up this year because of the result. I'm a Met fan, so I think of 2000. But here's the thing about 2000 I can't get over. You guys stunk in September. You couldn't win a game in September. And as soon as October came around, it was like – kind of what you were alluding to, hey, this is all about October. I think you lost like 15 out of 17, ended up winning 87 games that year. And then October comes around, boom, and you go on a run. You beat Seattle in six, and obviously you take care of the Mets in the World Series. Mm. What was that like having a September where you guys probably played your worst baseball you played in a long time and then flip the switch come October and you cap off your third straight championship?
Well, it is interesting because I don't think that we were just kind of coasting by. I think we were maybe just hit a little bit of a wall there. But I think everybody's attitude was, you know, we need to get ready. Everybody needs to be healthy. And everybody needs to, I mean, let's start getting this thing going. You know, a week before the, you know, the postseason started, it's like, okay, time to wake up. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, nip it in the bud, and let's get this thing done. And I think, you know, it was, I mean, the Mets were like, you know, the ultimate, you know, obviously a test, the World Series. But to get there, we had to get through through two sets of playoffs.
Yep.
And those guys, I remember.
Oakland and Seattle.
Seattle. And those were two tough teams, too. And I think, you know, at some point, you have to realize that, you know, you're playing for – this is what you're playing for the whole year. You prepare yourself and you try to make sure that you're healthy and in a good streak, you know, because you could be healthy, but you could be going through a slump. So that doesn't help anybody. So I think it's just trying to get your mind and your body ready for that moment. And because we were there in 96, 98, 99, and to us it was just a foregone conclusion – maybe just fooling ourselves into thinking that this is where we belong, but I think that's the best way to go about it, being extremely positive and even delusional about it. And that kind of attitude, it's a collective thing. It kind of like trickles down from the manager all the way down to the clubhouse manager to the bad boy. Everybody's in the same page. And I think that was one of the things that made us as good as we were.
And I can see Bernie right now, I got to tell you. And Bernie, truth be told, if you don't know this.
I know what you're about to say.
Both of us are Met fans.
Right.
But it's
okay,
it's
so
right.
But let me say
bring
this.
Up the final
no,
hour?
No, of course. I see Bernie. I will never be. This moment as I watch Bernie at Shea Stadium.
By Piazza.
Catching the ball. And did you think that ball was hit better than it was by Piazza?
Yes. Absolutely. And every time I get asked this question, I thought for a fact that, you know, the way – it was just a matter of watching Mariano's reaction when Piazza
hit the ball.
He thought
it was gone. I thought, at least, watching.
I never really see that in Mariano many times.
Right,
but, you know,
right.
In my tenure, he got – you know, there were few and far in between. But there were people that actually were able to hit him at times.
Right.
So he had this, you know, kind of – when he released the ball and the contact was made, he had this sort of body language, like this sort of like spring thing that he would do when somebody connected
right.
with the ball. And that was exactly the same thing he did when Mike Piazza hit that ball. So I'm looking, I have the best view in the field because I'm looking at him throwing the ball. I'm looking at Mike swinging and really putting a charge on that swing. The ball, solid contact, and it just kind of flew out of the bat, and Mariano went like, that had this
right.
like,
this
like
jump.
Nervous tick or something,
yeah.
this jump thing. As soon as I saw that, my first thing was, oh, no, the ball is gone. But as an outfielder, you get training to just going back to the fence
right.
then start making your adjustments. So halfway between where I was and the fence, I started looking up, and I see the ball kind of dying. And I was like, whoa, I may have a chance at this.
Chance.
I may have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, the ball is
dying. The ball didn't make it to the warning track.
I know.
Chance.
But I would have never
Bernie,
thought
Bernie, I knew
that.
It wasn't gone. I got to tell you right now.
Oh, man. I thought it was gone,
Bernie,
man. I thought it was gone.
I'm sitting in my season ticket right behind home plate, first row. I thought it was gone, and I started staring at you because that's what you do when you're at a
right,
ballpark.
Right.
You're staring at the outfielder. And when I saw you stop in front of the warning track, that I was stunned because I saw off the bat, I thought it was gone. I mean, I'd seen so many of those Mike swings.
I thought so too, man. And then ball coming down, and then I started – being flooded by this thought, do not let it drop. Don't let it drop.
You would never drop in that ball. Come on.
No.
Yeah.
That
so once I caught it, it was like, okay, thank you, God, and let's celebrate.
Years. Can you believe it's been 20 years?
20 years.
That is
awesome.
Crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Now
yeah.
before I let you go, and again, we're talking to the great Bernie Williams, how close did you come to signing with the Red Sox? Come on. I mean, how close did you – come on, really?
Very close. Yeah, very close at the time. I think I compare my situation a little bit. Not at the same, you know – like money-wise, but I think Cano spent, you know, it was the same situation that he probably thought that the team, after all the time and all the body of work, it maybe wasn't even about the money. It was about showing some, you know, like maybe, you know what, like, let's just give me something that shows me that you guys appreciate what we have done.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't really even about the money, but at the same time, I had to put everything in perspective and say, if I go to another team, it's like starting from scratch.
Right.
And
right.
that team, too.
The Red Sox.
That team.
Ooh.
You know, I've seen people make the transition, but it's not an easy
one. Usually it goes the other way.
It's not an easy one.
Usually they go that way.
Yeah, it's not an easy one.
They come from the Red Sox to the Yankees.
Yeah, it's not an easy one. And when it was all said and done, I had, in a way, in many ways, to swallow my pride and say, you know, I'm not talking about just myself here. I'm talking about my family. I'm talking about this whole system that is I sort of created, and I'm not about to give it away. So I made, you know, everything in my power to remain a Yankee, and, you know, that was kind of like the way it went. You know, I gave a call to George and say, hey, you know, I want – You know I want to be here, and I know you want me here. So let's work this out.
Right.
Let's
talk.
Right. Forget about general managers. Forget about agents. And let's me and you try to come up with some sort of a solution. And that's how it went down. That's exactly how it went down.
Well, I think every Yankee fan and yourself is very glad that it did, because it would have changed the history of you, the Yankees, the Red Sox.
Yeah, you're
I
mean, a Yankee.
The
you're
guy, yeah, the guy that was supposed to replace me was Albert Bell. I remember that Joe Torre, you know, there were just reports on him whining and dining, you know, Albert Bell, you know, that's being a possible replacement. And I would imagine, you know, how the whole thing would have turned out.
He's a pretty good hitter, Albert Bell.
He was.
But at that, point, it wasn't going to work.
No way.
Talk about the whole chemistry of the team the fact that he was, you know, that polarizing figure in the game. And it would have been good, but also it would not been, you know, you never know what would have happened. But I'm glad that history sort of actually happened this way, and I remain a Yankee for the rest of my career.
Career-long Yankee, like Joe said, it's special, man.
And one of the great center fielders in
you
Yankee
so much,
history.
Man.
There's no question
Thank
about
you,
it.
We the always great love talking to you.
And again, Thursday night, tomorrow night. So you got to go back. You're going back to New York tomorrow, right?
No, tomorrow night the concert is here.
Oh, it's here, the Capitol Theater.
The Capitol Theater, Ruth Ecker Hall, yes.
Okay, so it's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock right here in Tampa then.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
okay.
And
Let
I have
get it right.
A couple of dates out in New York. Actually, I'm going to be at the Yale University. It's just in New Haven.
New Haven, and,
And March 6th, doing the Duke Ellington jazz studies.
Wow. Sir Duke.
Sir Duke. Yes, absolutely. On the 7th, I'm going to be at the Sheen Center on Bleecker Street playing a concert with my collective band.
In the Village, huh?
Yeah, and it's going to be recorded, actually. They're going to record the 5 cameras, HD and all
that. Oh, is it going to be like a live album coming out of that? Is that what you're going to be, like a live CD?
We're thinking about that.
Wow.
You know, as far as that, you know, is concerned.
Bernie live at Bleecker.
Live at Bleecker Street at the Sheen Center.
Yeah.
And we're doing a week at the Cafe Carlisle on April from the 21st to the 25th.
Awesome.
Tremendous.
Congratulations.
Hey,
on
Bernie.
Success,
thank
Bernie.
You. It's always a pleasure seeing you. The great Bernie Williams.
Thank you so much, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.